We only have Dr. Sitchin for the remainder of the hour, so I'm probably going to hog most of the time. He promises, though, to come back at another time and spend more time with us. And that is the subject for the moment, time. You wrote a book, Doctor, called When Time Began.
Yes, I did.
We just got... have you seen the photographs taken by Hubble? I'm sure you have.
I saw them, and they're incredible.
Incredible is correct. Doctor, when did... How did we begin? Did time... Is there a beginning to time and an end?
I don't think so. I don't think so in universal terms. There is, of course, a universal time, dealing universal time, dealing with the whole universe, which we are now only beginning to see in ever growing detail. And those photographs by the Hubble Space Telescope are really amazing. So there's this great universe. You know, the theories about its beginning are mostly focused on the idea of the Big Bang. You know, that everything was some small ball that exploded.
Do you subscribe to that?
Based on what I read, because I'm not a astrophysicist, but based on what I read, it does make sense. The question is, of course, what made that a nucleus explode and thus bring about our... present the universe, and some of the mysteries in the universe are that the earlier discoveries this year showed that some components of our universe are older than the universe. So where did they come from? So this really leads us to not to astrophysics, but to philosophy.
Yes.
And to the concept of God. And again, this is the subject I deal with in my new book, Divine Encounters. God. As a matter of fact, if those, and I know that you and your lovely wife have read my books from the very first one, The 12th Planet, you may recall that I end that book with the question if the Anunnaki who came to Earth from Nibiru created, in quotation marks, created us through genetic intervention in the process of evolution. If they created us on Earth, us meaning Homo sapiens, who created them on their planet?
Yes.
I'm asked many times if those visitors to Earth were considered by the ancient peoples as gods, with a small g, did they have a religion? Did they have gods? So these discoveries in space, these discoveries of the universe, really lead us, or should lead us, in my opinion, into looking at where we are in the heavens, where we are in the chain of life, not from a chauvinistic point of view. For example, I'm asked many times, how could others like us, similar to us, live on a planet that goes out into space, Nibiru, goes out into space where it's so extremely cold and everything is frozen, and then comes near us, and etc. How could life exist there? So my counter question is sometimes is, I wonder what the people from Nibiru thought about us, or earlier, more primitive hominids, when they came here 450,000 years ago. Did they wonder how could life evolve on a planet so close to the sun? So the whole notion that life, intelligent life, can exist only on a planet our size, with precisely our chemical components of oxygen and nitrogen, etc., and only at the distance from the sun of about 94 million miles that Earth is, that only here and not in the immense universe with its diversity of galaxies and stars, and each star has planets, or most stars have planets. So we have to stop thinking in terms of those, what I call chauvinistic terms.
Egotistical, really.
Yeah, because we are really an insignificant, Earth is an insignificant speck of dust in universal terms. And therefore, when we ask each other, when people ask me, do you believe in God? I mean, first, you have to define God. But in universal terms, of course I believe. I believe that as the Sumerians believed, and in a way I'm a descendant of the Sumerians, because Abraham was a Sumerian who migrated to Canaan, and I'm one of his descendants.
However, you do believe that our creators, I'll just use that word, may be God with a small g?
Well, those who used genetic engineering, and again I'm relying on very detailed Sumerian text. I did not invent that. I indeed add anything and everything in my books is based on ancient text writings and pictorial evidence. The only difference between me and other scholars in this field is that they treat all those texts as mythology. And I said to myself, what if this is true? What if all this really happened? And thus, the books that have the overall title, The Earth Chronicles. So, they came here, they found early hominids, let's call them ape men, ape women. I don't want to use the scientific technical terminology of that is confusing and keeps changing, by the way, with more discoveries. So they found us, they needed workers, they needed manpower. They jumped the gun on evolution and mixing the genes of one of their males with the egg of, let's call her an ape woman, an Eve. By the way, that there was an Eve about the time that I said in my very first book, some 270,000 years ago, was confirmed. A few years ago, this year, it was confirmed through genetic studies that there was an Adam, also one single male ancestor, about 2,700 years ago. So, I mean, anything that the Sumerians told us, that there are other solar systems, that planets can have more than one moon, that we have Uranus and Neptune and Pluto, everything gets corroborated daily. For example, there were reports a few weeks ago about confirmation that another star, another sun, was definitely found out to be to have planets
That's
orbiting
right.
it.
That's
and
right.
the headline was, a new discoverers challenge notion of Earth's uniqueness. And I asked, whose notion? Whose notion is being challenged? Not of the Sumerians. Their notions are being confirmed. So the whole thing really is mind-boggling.
It is the modern notions that are being challenged, of course.
It's the modern notion. Indeed, the subtitle of my book, Genesis Revisited, is modern science catching up with ancient knowledge? And of course, it is.
All right, this is a philosophical question. But if the ancients that you talk of were to now revisit their creation, our Earth, and look at us, do you think, Doctor, they would consider us to be a success or just an experiment gone wrong?
Well, that is a very, you know, usually the one being questioned says it's a very good question if he doesn't intend to answer it. But it's not just a good question. It's a very serious question. And I think it really goes to the core of the issue, because to each one of us who is born and eventually goes through life till the end of our days and struggles and raises a family and pays taxes and looks at the heavens and wonder what's next. Will there be wars? Will there be calamities? Will there be more... Will Earth be hit by some of those comets? Will there be more earthquakes, etc.? The question you ask really goes to the core of it, because once they are back, and I believe that their emissaries are already back, and this explains the UFO sightings, etc.
You keep answering questions I'm about to ask. I wanted to ask you about that. You believe then this UFO phenomenon is real and represents some sort of monitoring of us?
Well, what exactly it represents, I cannot say, because I was not abducted, and nobody stuck a needle in my belly button. And I'm just taking the word of those who say. I'm accepting at least part of the TV evidence that we see of those flying objects, etc. So something is going on, whether it's exactly the way those who claim to have seen or been abducted say it or not. But somebody is back. Somebody is back, and I must make it clear in the few minutes we have that these are not yet the Anunnaki, but these are their emissaries, because as I show in my books, such beings with that kind of head, with the big eyes, with the peculiar non-human-like skins, etc., and with unclear sexual identification, male or female, etc., were seen and were depicted, and I showed the pictures of those depictions in my book. So some the emissaries are back.
All right, you have seen the photographs, Doctor, haven't you, of the dissection of the supposed alien at Socorro or Roswell, whichever it was?
I saw what was broadcast. Yeah.
And what were your impressions of that?
I still have to be convinced.
They were interesting creatures. I am also not convinced, but I have yet to...
I would like to be convinced, but I'm yet to be convinced.
Mm-hmm. There is more and more and more of this kind of thing coming to us. Are we being conditioned for what is to come?
Well, what I believe is that somebody is scouting us, and this happened the first time that they came here. First, they send their scouts or their robots. By the way, these are robots. These are not
biological.
And these are androids, let's call them. Okay. So what would happen when the Anunnaki themselves come back? That was your question.
And, yes, sir. Yes.
I'm not trying to evade it. The answer is not clear even to me. Because the most described instance of one of the most recent, and the most described, both in the Bible and the Sumerian text, is the time of the deluge, the great flood. Mm-hmm. And according to the Sumerian text, the Bible condensed the two personalities, the two leaders, one of whom was called Enlil, meaning Lord of the Command, and one was Enki, meaning Lord of Earth. Enki was the one involved in the genetic manipulation that led to us Homo sapiens being created on Earth. And Enlil was the stricter one, the one that wanted everything to go by the law and not to digress, etc. So the complaints of Enlil, who instigated the notion of not telling mankind that the deluge is coming so that mankind would be wiped off the face of the earth, and Enki connived with his faithful servant and worshiper, whom the Bible calls Noah, connived to save Noah and his family and some of the friends, etc. So there were two of them, or whose descendants now lead the Anunnaki, I don't know. The complaint of Enlil, which he used to justify his suggestion, let us not tell mankind about the coming catastrophe and let mankind be destroyed, were twofold. One, which the Bible stresses, that there was evil. Men became evil. And in the Sumerian text, it says that Enlil complained about the proliferation of mankind, that too many of them.
Yes.
Now, I definitely believe that two factors that would be taken into consideration, whether to give us more knowledge and technology, which was done in the past every 3,600 years, the transition from Old Stone Age to Mesolithic, Neolithic, Sumerian civilization. It's always a 3,600-year intervals. That the decision whether to continue that or whether to look to our demise again as at the time of the deluge would depend on these two issues. The mankind's evil, and we have seen plenty of it during World War II and the Holocaust and many repeats of those phenomena like now in the former Yugoslavia and what's happening in Africa, which doesn't get enough publicity, but the slaughter there is incredible.
Yes.
Of tribe against tribe, etc. So the evil is obvious. But the other thing, which is really up to us, but we are not doing anything about it, is the explosion of population, overpopulation. So I think that these are two things that we really ought to focus on and try to change the course of mankind before the day, which the Bible called the day of the Lord or the second coming of the kingdom of heaven to earth. Before that really takes place, we ought to change our ways.
All right, Dr. Sitchin, I want to ask you this. In an old movie called The High and Mighty, in the old days when that airplane's going across the Pacific, there came a point around mid-Pacific where they only had enough fuel to go forward to wherever they were going. They could not go back. A little red light would come on in the cockpit and say, point of no return.
That's correct.
And has humanity's little red light come on?
Yeah, I'm not a prophet, again, I want to say. I'm a reporter. But we were definitely, whether the red light went on or is about to go on, we are more or less at that point.
So we're very close or there.
Yeah.
All right, one more question. In your book, The Twelfth Planet, you addressed roughly the same subject as was addressed in Chariots of the Gods. Somebody wants to know, with regard to the ancient astronauts, how much did, if at all, Chariots influence your writing?
Well, it influenced me to the point that after spending almost 30 years researching my subject, which the research started when I was a schoolboy, I thought to myself, well, here somebody comes and explains it in his way, what happened, and then talks about ancient astronauts, etc. So what's the point in my writing, in my book? And that was almost my decision not to write my book. But then I decided that there's really no point in all these books, including the book that you mentioned, just to speculate, like say, look at the pyramids of Giza. Now, who could have built them? You know, all these millions of stone blocks, etc., etc. And when you, the reader or the listener, shrugs the shoulders and says, I don't know, you say, well, only somebody from somewhere else could do it, an extraterrestrial, an ancient astronaut. Now, I felt that to be serious, and I'm a serious researcher, and nobody challenged my facts, some disagree with my conclusions or my understanding of the ancient text, but nobody says there's no such text. I think that unless you say, if Earth was visited, number one, by whom? Not just to say ancient astronauts. By whom?
Yes.
Second, from where? From where? You can't say, well, the universe must be populated by others light years away. You know, from where? It has to be technically feasible. Thirdly, to say when. When? I mean, you can't say, in ancient times, thousands of years ago. You have to be specific.
All right, Dr.
And finally, why? Why would anybody keep coming and visiting our planet unless there was a reason for it? And I answer all these questions in my very first book.
And you
why,
also,
when, from where, by whom.
Yes, and you will also answer them, I take it, and take questions. You're going to be, we've got to go, we're out of time, but you're going to be at Las Vegas Cashman Field Center Saturday, November 18th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Whole Life Expo, correct?
Thank you for mentioning it.
All right, and I will also give the number so people can pre-register. It's 1-800- 1-800-332-0099. That's 1-800-332-0099. And we did not have enough time, Dr. Sitchin, so you promise to come back?
And we'll deal with the issue of time.
The issue of time. Dr. Sitchin, it has been a great honor to have you on the program,
Thank you, Art.
I look forward to your coming back.
Thank you very much.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Zachariah Sitchin. And we were able to cover a lot of things that I wanted to cover, not nearly as much as I wanted to cover, but many of the current events that I'm sure you wanted answers from Dr. Sitchin about. So there you've got it. Again, he's going to be in Las Vegas on Saturday, November 18th, and the pre-register number is 1-800-332-0099. In some markets, it's arrivederci. For the rest of you, we'll be right back.